I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, 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 go! Go.
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if ERLEADA is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit ERLEADA.com. CP43926-7V1.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs. Who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store or online today. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hello, and welcome to Season 2 of Coffee and Code. I'm your host, Ashley Coffee. Coffee and Code is here to help bridge the gap between technology and people through each informative episode. On this show, you'll hear exclusive interviews with experts and innovators in the tech space. No matter your level of expertise or ability, I believe you can be excited, informed, and empowered to learn how the rapidly evolving tech world impacts your daily life. Subscribe to Coffee and Code to be notified when new episodes go live. You can also find me on Twitter at AshleyCoffee_ and on Instagram at AshleyRCoffee89. Thanks for listening and welcome to Coffee and Code. Hello and welcome to another episode of Coffee and Code. I'm excited to have a guest on the show today. His name is Jonathan Anderson. Jonathan is the co-founder and CEO at CanDo. He loves technology but can't write a line of code. He has a dog named Ronnie, a cat named Winslow, and a husband named Luke. Jonathan is passionate about product-led selling. He has launched services, strategy, operations, and analytics teams at venture-backed SaaS startups, including Insight Squared and LaunchDarkly. Prior to startups, Jonathan worked at Bain & Company. Jonathan has an incredible background of experience, and our paths just somehow crossed in this virtual world. But welcome to the show, Jonathan. I'm glad to have you here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Ashley.
And before we kind of dive in, I would like to take a moment just to hear a little bit more about yourself. I love your bio here. It's not the traditional bio, which is why I like it so much. So thank you for sharing that. But tell us a little bit more about yourself, Jonathan.
Yeah. I'm a big believer in a more interesting bio. I think I missed the unfortunately the dating profile phase. I met my husband before the apps were a big deal. So this is my opportunity to get creative under pressure. I'm a part of the reason I'm so interested in kind of CanDo is part of the no code space, which is basically for those of us who can't actually code but want to be involved in technology. And a big thing, I'm a big believer in kind of creating things. I've always really enjoyed doing that. And for me, creating a startup like CanDo is really about well, making a startup, but also making really a UI design tool. So kind of giving the power of creation to a bunch of other folks. So I think for me, it's really, I guess if I were to sum kind of who I am, it's like, I like making stuff. And so this is really an opportunity to do that.
Amazing. And it's really important to constantly be creating and looking for what's the next new innovation and utilizing the skill set that you have to create something new. So can you tell us a little bit more about Candu?
Yeah, I'm happy to. Yeah, so Candu is actually a UI builder, which is a fancy way of saying that we help you create little widgets or embeds that you can basically use to improve the user experience of a web app or a website. If you think about it like a website's basically, or web app is kind of like a house, we're kind of like, we make furniture. So it's like stuff you can put in your house that will improve, what it looks like, what it feels like, and really just improve the user experience. And what's been kind of fun is that we kind of take this traditionally like developer run activity of like building components or HTML blocks, and we give it over to really non-technical folks. So people like me who are in product or marketing or on the customer team, who have a lot of really good ideas for how we can improve the user experience, but don't actually have the technical chops to like make any of that stuff happen. And so we're trying to make it so easy that like a kid can create a component themselves. Yeah. And then use it to improve the user experience.
I love that you are empowering others with the tools they need to get from point A to point B, which is really exciting. And I want to kind of dig into how you created Candu. I know you founded it in 2018. So can you talk us through a little bit more about the creation of Candu and what that looked like?
Yeah, it's a winding path, as it were. I think the insight for Candu really came out of not something work related. It was actually building my wedding website with Wix.
Oh wow, that's amazing!
It's just such an easy platform to use, and it's, you know, you take a button, you drag it onto the canvas. It's just a really great way to build something. And really looking at that like kind of WYSIWYG technology, or WYSIWYG stands for what you see is what you get, as in you get to create the GUI, the graphical user interface. And I was like, hold on, this is so easy. Why in the world don't we have this at work? Like, why am I going through engineering and product decisions and design when really I'm just trying to, you know, change an announcement bar on the page? And so that was kind of the original insight. And then, of course, there's the whole work of finding a technical co-founder who's outstanding to work with, and getting funding and hiring a team and all that jazz. But really the core idea was, why don't we apply some of this technology, and that's kind of existed in a consumer space, and bring it over to really the, how does it fit into the enterprise?
Wow, that's incredible. And what a great time to be in this space too. I mean, I read a McKinsey report recently and talks about how what happened in 3 months when the pandemic hit would have otherwise taken 7 years. In like the normal timeline, which is just wild conceptually to think about.
Yeah, we're I think we're at the kind of the, I say like a we were kind of, I think, lucky in a sense, in that, I guess, you know, luck is trying to be at the right space at the right time, right? But yeah, we thankfully were part of this like no code I guess rebirth, or kind of this willingness for development teams to kind of give away some of their Legos, as it were, to non-technical teams. And at the same time, there's another trend that's happening in the world, which is, we call it like product-led growth or product-led selling. And it's really just that consumers, like all of us, have such high expectations for how a product should work based on, you know, Netflix apps and TikTok and all these other things. And we expect more from the apps that we use for work. And so we're kind of lucky in that we're kind of at the, Candu is kind of at the focal point of kind of these two trends in the market.
Wow. Wow. And I noticed that you have a very interesting kind of like background that led you here, but I'm curious, did you ever have that aha moment where you're like, I know this is exactly what I want to do, or kind of what was that? talk me through that.
I mean, to be honest, starting a company is such a crazy thing. I don't think I really understood how much work it would be. That's how stressful it would be when I first got involved. I think I I grew up in Silicon Valley and kind of marinated in that, the ethos of that for too long. Yeah. And so it seemed like a normal thing to do. It is not. But I think I was kind of one of those people who was like, okay, I think I want to be a founder. I think I really enjoy it. I would really enjoy it. And then I kind of worked looking for an idea. And I actually did something where I kind of came up with an idea a day for a year, in terms of what I could do, which is like a really crazy thing to do. And also like not actually that helpful, because if you think about it, I think the best ideas come out of actually things that you were doing at work or in your life where you're like, oh, this is a problem I want to solve. But it was kind of fun to just kind of be in that generative mind space for a long time. Even if that's not really where the idea ultimately came from. I just had a bunch of travel ideas, of which I have no business being in the travel business, but, that's where my mind goes, at least in a brainstorm. So, I'm sorry. I'm not sure that's an aha moment, but that's the truth.
Wow. That's amazing that you did an idea a day for an entire year. That takes some true discipline.
I think there's people who meditate every day. That seems much harder to me than just coming up with a crazy idea a day, but, it's each her own, so.
True. I am one of those people. I use the Calm app. It's super, this is not an endorsement or a paid advertisement, but it's a great app because it keeps me consistent for the most part.
It's so good. I have tried and failed to meditate on a regular basis a lot of times, but the startup is launched. So, at least that part worked.
Yeah. And also I will close the loop there with adding that there's no such thing as a wrong meditation. You're showing up for yourself. There we go.
Thank you for deepening my practice. I appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Well, let's go back to low code, no code. So we kind of dipped our toe a little bit into that. But can you kind of dive in a little bit more and give your best description for listeners who might not be familiar? I liked the analogy that you used as like the Legos. That was really good. But kind of like you can talk through the under the hood, what's happening there.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So no code and low code are basically movements that really are, the concept is basically a job that's done traditionally through development, like a technical that requires sort of code, is given to someone who cannot. So low code actually implies that there's, it's basically a developer, for lack of a better term, like a way to kind of speed up the work that they're doing. We can automate a portion of it, or we have reusable blocks that are going to use part of it, but you still need a little bit of code to kind of make the thing work as a job. No code implies that the developer is kind of written out of the equation, that they're no longer involved, that they've given you the keys to the car and someone else can drive it, is the idea. And really, I think no code and low code come out of this idea that once you've solved a problem a bunch of times, it's no longer requires someone really smart and technical to think about it anymore. Like we can let the other rest of us, come in and configure it, right? And that's, I think, a big difference. And I think we now have a term for it, but we've actually been doing this type of activity for a long time. There was a time, for example, when like writing an email, creating an email required code, right?
Yes.
And now that's been completely abstracted into this world where no one hopefully is coding up emails at this point in time. So I think the low code, no code, activities wrapping for a long time, but now we have kind of a more appropriate label for it.
Yes, that's a really good description. And I want to also reference something that people might be familiar with. The audience is code.org. Mm-hmm. I used to facilitate these code.org coding boot camps on the National Day of Coding when I worked at Apple. And the curriculum there is basically like no code. Which is great because you're teaching kids concepts of coding of, okay, move forward, turn left, or like just kind of putting the building blocks there. So it's not as overwhelming when you're learning on the baseline or just maybe have zero technical knowledge.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. It's actually, I think low code and no code are probably the best ways to teach someone how to code actually.
Yeah.
Cause you learn like how the thing works and then slowly you get deeper and deeper until eventually you're dealing with memory storage and then you've gone way too far. You pull back out.
Yeah. <So. laughs> And it just makes it more approachable, right?
For
sure. Some people get intimidated and say like, I'm not a coder or like, I'm not technical. I hear those terms a lot, but what really is like, it's more about having just the comfortability of learning something new. It's okay. There's mm-hmm. there's no dumb question for this. We're all learning.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 100%.
Yeah. Well, with Can Do, it's been exploding. I recently saw that you recently had a $5 million in seed funding raised by Two Sigma Ventures. So can we talk more about the process of, you know, raising that? That's very a stressful position to be in as a founder, building and scaling a product, but also working with funding at the same time. So for those mm-hmm. entrepreneurs that are maybe listening to the audience, what is something mm-hmm. that you would give as a piece of advice going through this journey?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think probably the most important thing is actually something we already touched on, which is getting really clear on what your problem statement is, and then having a thesis that you have, that you have conviction in, that you actually, it's actually not a thesis, it's really a belief. So for us, it was that, you know, hey, we should, no code should be brought into the enterprise. We should take no code and we should be using it in building, you know, customer grade applications. And so we're our flavor is that we're no code for existing products. And we're kind of the first flavor to do that. And Two Sigma Ventures and Charles River Ventures, CRV, were like, hey, that's something we can get behind. We want to see that in the world. We think that that should exist. We have you taught us something different about how the world ought to be, and now we want to give you the funding to bring a product to market to see if it sticks. I'm actually describing very specifically, I think I'd say like your first kind of institutional money, what that looks like. I think the most important thing, honestly, for a founder is to get, just to get conviction in your own idea. When it turns into a belief, and I'm a very like practical, like rational person, but when you're like, hey, it's crazy to me that this thing is not in the world, and if we don't build it, somebody else will, that's a really good time to look for funding, because that conviction is so contagious.
100%. I could not agree more. And I 100% agree on your statement of figuring out your problem statement. I feel like I see a lot of really excited and really passionate founders or people who want to start a business, but they have the hardest mm-hmm. time defining what that problem is. And mm-hmm. they maybe start the business without that clarity. And then yes. 6 months later to a year, or maybe like 10, they're like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Right. And I think even to that point, a lot of people talk about this idea of pivoting, right? Yeah. Hey, we started in this market, now we're going to go over here. A pivot is actually a really painful process, because ideally you're working with a team at this point, or you have a co-founder, or you have investors or whatever, that you've convinced this is a great idea. And then you're like, actually, I was wrong. It's actually, I think maybe the value's over here, but I'm not confident yet. And if you have a problem statement as your North Star, like we're going to solve this problem, pivoting is not hard at all, because you're saying, hey, this is a new way of solving the problem that I care about. But if you're kind of starting in with the solution and not with a problem, then it feels like you're kind of, you know, going back on something. So I think that there's a lot of value in being like, you know what, I may not have found the perfect thing just yet, but I really believe that this problem needs to be solved.
Yes. It's kind of like taking two different routes to get to the same location, your two mm-hmm. options there. It's really important.
And I think you think that the solution's like further along because it feels further along, but it's not. Because your solution, no matter how good your slides are, no matter how good your prototype is in Figma or whatever you're building in, it's just wrong. it's just wrong. And you'll learn that later, you know, as you kind of, as people start to use it.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, what are you currently working on at Can Do that you can talk about?
Oh, yeah. I was just actually dog fooding earlier today. One of our new features. We're doing a lot of, we do a lot of onboarding pages with Can Do.
Okay.
It's probably our most common use case is kind of the front page of your product. And the reason it's a really good fit for us is because it's usually very content oriented. You know, hey, what should users see first? And it's often just a pain to code because you're often making different variants. You know, new users see this, returning users see that. And so it's actually a really good fit for an editor like what we have, because it's so easy to change things as you learn what works and kind of create things for different audiences. Very similar to how you might think of email, but the UI version of that, as it were. Yeah. And the thing I'm really excited about is that we're launching a lot more event-driven activity. So when users do things in the product, kind of outside of just the can-do dashboard, in real time, the product will change. What's cool about that is it gives a sense of like, hey, you're dealing with something that was, you know, a great looking product that was built by a developer, which obviously it wasn't, but they don't need to know that. And that it feels very responsive to them and very interactive. So, that's the whole name of the game for us is how do we make a product feel, fun to use, that you get better at the job that you're trying to do by using the product itself.
Yes. And I want to compliment you. Whenever I looked at Candu's website for the first time, it was fun and exciting. I don't know, dare I use the term, to just kind of browse through and kind of see, like, I was quickly able to determine what exactly Candu is very quickly. You know, I love the videos that you have, especially the front page video. That's the one I watched and I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I love the approach that you cultivate to make it fun and approachable without being intimidating.
Yeah, I think I'm so glad that you enjoyed the video. I had a lot of fun making it. It's we're making HTML blocks, you know, we make widgets. Yeah. Like that's not fun. But actually, no, it's really fun because we're letting someone create things when they couldn't otherwise do that. And so I think selling the sizzle is sometimes important when it comes to trying to change the world in a small way, like we are. And also it's really fun to build things. And so that should be part of the brand identity for sure.
That's right. Creating, constantly creating. So that leads me into my next question, Jonathan. What drives your creative inspiration?
What drives my creative inspiration? That's a great question. I am very much a problem solver type. So I like to like see a problem and then I will kind of fixate on it until I figure out a way to fix it, which is not always actually helpful for starting a company because I think that perfectionist streak is you really need to tamper it down and do kind of solving first problems first. But for me, I get such a kick out of seeing like beautiful UX design. And it's really just like one of those things that like it just makes me happy. You actually brought up an amazing app before we talked, Calm. They have one of the best onboarding experiences ever, right? It levels up as you go. As you said, it did change your behavior in a fundamental way. Your life is different now because you are hooked in by this application.
Yes, 100%. I pay the yearly fee and I have no problem with that.
Yes, because you're getting value from it because it's changing your life in a meaningfully good way. And you learned about the value, you've realized the value, and now you're off and you're going. And so I think seeing all the little, finesse and the touches that, for example, the Calm app puts into their onboarding experience, that is what I find really inspiring to see, really well thought through UI and UX design.
Yes. A plus one to that. And I'm curious, did you ever do like art in school? Were you ever an artist? Did painting or sculpture or anything?
I think my creativity is probably more on the writing track. I really enjoy writing more so than other things. I'm definitely a doodler. And then in the working world, I worked briefly at a consulting company for a couple of years, and I made a lot of slides. And it's a very specific flavor of creativity, but it's very structured and it's very buttoned up. But it is a flavor of it. So give me a Google slide, I'll make it look great.
Oh, I love it. That is a very special skill. Also, I want to just add to that. I have one of my colleagues. He had an experience at one point early on in his career, and his background is in like UI UX from Georgia Tech, and one of his jobs was specifically making sure this slide decks for this company looked good and fun and engaging. And sometimes he teaches me new things, little tips and tricks to make things easier. So it just blows my mind how much that comes in handy in just everyday life.
For sure. And actually, it's the canvas layout of a slide is actually a lot of what we think about when we're creating, trying to make our editor easier to use. And so actually, there's a little bit of overlap between these, a lot of these kind of like Miro's, FigJam. And I think Google Slides and PowerPoint as well as Keynote do a great job with this, kind of teaching us to think visually and to show things visually. And we're trying to apply that same concept into actually creating an HTML block that you can use to improve a website. So
that's so cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Well, I'm curious, Jonathan, what kind of resources or websites would you have for those listening who want to learn more about you or Can Do?
Okay, well, they should definitely go to our website. You brought it up earlier, so I'll be happy to plug it. It's Can Do, like you can do it, and it's candu.ai. And we have this really great creator showcases page where you can see what other no-coders have made for their businesses. And there's some really cool stuff there and some really awesome stories about folks who have kind of created really cool things. Hopefully there's something there that's pretty interesting, at least for the no-code group. And then for those folks who are maybe thinking more around like founding a company and venture, I cannot claim to be an expert on that, but a couple of resources that might be helpful. I might suggest looking at the Mom Test, which is a way to basically do customer discovery. Oh, wow. And it's a really good time to figure out like, basically the concept is that your mom is always, will always tell you that she loves your idea, but really she could probably never use it. Oh. It's just a good way to kind of disentangle, people who want to be helpful, but won't give you the truth.
That's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I found it helpful in my journey. So, maybe I'll pay it forward for sure.
Nice. What a great tip. And I will be sure to link all of those resources and websites in the show notes for listeners to easily access. But this has been a really great conversation, Jonathan. I am blown away by your creativity and how much you've accomplished. And before we kind of depart today, is there anything else that you would like to leave us with?
No, I mean, I think, first of all, this podcast was so fun. I think demystifying tech is like, I do that in my own life, you know, with my parents all the time. I feel like you're doing that on a much grander scale. So like, kudos to you, actually.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And I think in general, like for folks who are first getting, or kind of dipping their toes into like the technology space, I think no code is such a great thing that exists in the world. And I'm just so glad to be a part of it. It really is helping people who feel like they can't do stuff to get involved and actually start to create things that are meaningful and joyful. And I just love it. So yeah, happy to be a part of that.
And that's a good note to end on. And thank you so much again for being on the show. Thank you for all who are listening. I hope you learned something new today. Again, I'll be leaking the website to Can Do and the other resources that Jonathan mentioned today. And don't forget to subscribe to be notified when new episodes go live. If you enjoyed today's episode of Coffee and Code, share it with a friend. You can also support this podcast by leaving a rate and review on Apple Podcasts, and you can also share it on social media. It doesn't matter if you have 5 or 500 or 5,000 followers, you have influence. And lastly, don't forget to subscribe to be notified when new episodes go live. Thank you so much for listening to Coffee and Code.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, 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 go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP439267V1.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.